know, they say with thought leadership, the greatest form of acknowledgement of thought leadership is when you respect your peers and look to your peers for to learn from. And I have to say that that's true from the person sitting across from me today. I have Larry Steibel from Steibel, Peabody & Associates. Could I give you a better introduction, Larry?
I can't do better than that.
There's not a lot of people I say that about. But Larry, you've been doing some very, I think, important research. It's a topic that comes up for me often with a lot of entrepreneurs. You want to share that with us?
Sure. We were looking at the kind of the issues of why do so many founders of companies fail once private equity comes on the scene.
Right.
And from the perspective of the private equity company, you know, one of the reasons you've invested in the company is because of the talent, the network, and the credibility of the founder.
And clients and the revenue.
And right. Then you fire the founder and you've got all sorts of upheavals. So why do these things happen and how can we increase the probability that it's going to work out?
Right.
So what we did was we took a look at five pairs. Each pair was a founder CEO of a company who took equity with a private equity company. So now the board transformed from a founder-dominated company to a private equity-dominated company.
Right.
And the persons lasted for at least 5 years, which I consider successful.
That's a pretty successful run,
that
5 years.
Most don't.
Most don't.
And then, so I talked with the founder, and then I talked with the lead director from the private equity firm that was the chairman of the board at the time.
Right.
So what went right? You know, most of the times you hear war stories about what went wrong. So
right.
I want to know what went right, and
okay.
what can we learn from that? So that's what the study's about.
Okay, I can make my own assumptions, but I won't because I don't need you to, you know, correct me. So why don't we get into it and find out what we learn?
Well, first thing I learned is that one of the things that make entrepreneurs so special is that they can imagine a reality that doesn't exist. And then they work very hard. They drive themselves and they drive everybody around them crazy. And they make that reality real.
Mm-hmm.
Psychologists call that the self-fulfilling prophecy.
Right.
You think it, and then it actually becomes that way.
No, it doesn't. I still can't play tennis. But go on.
Steve Jobs, they called it the reality distortion field.
Right.
You could imagine something and then insist on it.
Right.
But the reality distortion field or self-fulfilling prophecy always has a downside, just as his tendency to imagine a reality that didn't exist made Steve Jobs successful. It eventually helped contribute to his death because he had this image that changing his diet alone would cure pancreatic cancer. No, it's not. No, that's not true. So you see the same dysfunction going on when the founder accepts the money from the board. There's now a change in personnel at the board. The founder no longer dominates the board. It's a private equity-dominated board. And the founder continues to do the same behaviors that worked in the founder-dominated board. Part of the reason is these guys and ladies learn habits of success that work extremely well for them. And good habits that are successful are very hard to change. And there's nobody on the board, and certainly the private equity people are not the ones who will give them a dope slap and say, you got to change your behavior now. It's a different political
reality.
They
don't have a developmental formula.
They need someone like you to give them a dope slap and say, you know, it's different.
Right.
And what worked before won't work the same.
Right.
So one of the things that we've seen with these successful boards is that often there is a structure in place in the board where someone that the CEO trusts can give him a dope slap when he needs to have a dope slap.
I think that's very healthy.
Because he's not going to accept the dope slap from the private equity partner.
I think I might change my card. Chief Dope Slapper.
And the successful founders know they need it.
Right. They do.
They do.
They do, and they encourage it.
Right.
Right.
So one thing that we've seen is structure. So for example, in one successful situation, the entrepreneur hired a new general counsel, and the general counsel happened to be friends with the partner who was the chairman of the board of the private equity company. And so what he would do with the CEO's permission and is that the general counsel would talk to the private equity partner about what's going on at the board and what the private equity partner thought. And then the general counsel would then talk to the CEO.
Right.
And tell, here's what's going on with
the conduit.
Because the CEO would accept things from the general counsel who he hired and who reports to him.
That he trusts and felt he could manage.
That he would be infuriated if he heard the same things from the private equity partner directly.
Right. Sometimes I'm just the messenger. I'm just relaying from one board member to another opinions. But for me, they just don't seem to be charged.
Yeah, because you're with them.
Right.
I remember once I had a situation where the private equity partner wanted the vice president of sales fired. And he knew that if he said this directly to the CEO would just...
That's it.
He asked me to say it.
Right.
And it was helpful to hear it from somebody else.
Right.
So that's one structure. Second structure is when the board is created, the private equity partners say to the CEO, you can put one person that you want on the board that you trust. And so that person then becomes the conduit of information to the CEO.
Right.
It's very important and successful with successful CEOs. When you walk into that board meeting, there should be no surprises. If there's going to be any problems, you know about it before the board meeting.
Exactly.
If you're surprised at any board meeting, you've
never
failed.
Met a good leader who liked surprises.
Right. So that's
they're controlling by nature, but they're mature about their controlling nature.
Yeah. Second thing that I found important with these founders that were successful is when they dominate their boards, they like to go to their boards with mission accomplished messages.
Right.
In other words, we had a problem, sales collapsed in October.
But I handled it.
But it's now under control.
Right.
And it's at that point when they say mission accomplished that they go to the board with the announcement.
Right.
And that's exactly the 100% worst thing that you could do with a private equity dominant board.
Well, because they feel they were left out of the process.
They feel you kept us in the dark.
Right.
And private equity people, they're okay with bad news because they, 90% of their investments don't do well. So, they won't go to pieces if you give them bad news. They will go to pieces if they're kept in the dark.
Right.
And once they feel they're kept in the dark.
Well, they don't want secrets on their investments.
Trust is the coin of the realm in the private equity world.
Right.
And once you lose trust, it's very hard to regain trust. And so one of the things that's really important for CEOs that is unnatural for entrepreneurs is to go to the board as soon as you got bad news.
At the front end.
At the front end, not the back end. Because their instinct, based on their success with the before, is to wait until you solve the problem and then you inform the board after the fact. It's exactly the worst thing to do.
Right.
So that would be issue number two.
Okay.
Issue number three is stay in contact with your private equity people.
Right.
They're busy. They're not going to be contacting you. You gotta go.
It's like a good marriage. You gotta keep communication going.
You gotta keep it up.
Yep. Yeah.
But I'm sure nothing I've said is new to you. You do this every day.
It's not new to me, but what's important is you're objectifying what I practice and what I believe, and you've done this through some research.
Right.
So I think that's what's important to my listeners. because you're only reinforcing it by saying that you went out and talked to these PE people and that you've talked to these entrepreneurs who survived the PE people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what's important here, is that you're validating what I already knew.
But you, in your experience, people, most of them don't survive that.
I would say probably less than 10% survive.
Yeah.
Because they cannot make the changes up front. They have their particular style that they've worked out over the years, their way of dealing things, and they cannot adapt to the new environment. They do have a way of dealing with problems, which is their way of, and they think that that's the right way to deal with problems in terms of how inclusive they are in terms of problems, and that's inconsistent with how the PE people want to be dealt with. And so you're right, they're not adapting to the new environment that they're in. And that's really, it's about adaptability.
Yeah, exactly.
They're not adapting. And I think that's the key to the whole thing. And, you know, you're all about helping people. I've seen you evolve over the last 30 years since I first heard your name in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I know anybody who's evolved more than you have. And you haven't dropped any of your old stuff. You're still doing your old stuff.
Right.
But you've evolved your practice. That's why I said I consider you a thought leader.
Thank
you. Don't
you
just practice it, but you actually live it.
Thank you.
And you're easy to be with.
Thank you.
For me. I mean, I don't know. I'm not part of your family, so. And you know what they say, you pick your friends, the devil picks your family.
Oh, yes.
Now, are there any more on your list that you want to share?
I think those are the key ones. The advice for private equity partners is probably get someone like me or you.
Right.
To be the interface between them and the CEOs.
That's nice of you to say me too.
To apply the dope
slaps. I would actually hire you, so it just shows you.
Thank you. I'd hire you.
But in addition to that, you know, you're quite the penman. Mm-hmm. You, I get your mailings regularly, and I'd like people to know about your mailings. You're in Psychology Today.
Right.
I've seen you in the Harvard Business Review.
Right.
You are the most prolific practitioner in the press that I know. I know people who are academics and they're out of touch, but you are a practitioner who's constantly in the high-level press. So why don't we tell our listeners how they can find you and all the places they can find you?
Sure. The easiest way is to Google Psychology Today and then my name, STYBEL.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a column that I write every month called Platform for Success.
Okay.
And the focus is career success and leadership success. So Psychology Today gives me the opportunity to basically talk about anything that I want in the areas of leadership and careers. And what I really like to do in these columns is to sort of say, here's some of the evidence-based research that's going around, and here's how you could apply it in a very practical way. I don't consider myself an academic researcher, but I consider myself really good about taking academic research and sort of showing how you can practically apply that.
Well, that's part of what this interview has been all about.
Yeah.
Now, I've also seen you in the Harvard Business Review this year more than once.
Right.
Right. Right.
Harvard Business Review, I do blogs and occasionally an article for them.
And you have your own newsletter that goes out regularly, correct?
That's right.
And how, if someone wanted to subscribe to that, how would they do that?
All they have to do is send an email to me, and that's lstybel@stybelpeabody. That's lstybel@stybelpeabody.com.
Now, you run a family business, correct?
Oh, my God, yes. It was 34 years and going,
right.
And my wife is my partner.
A partner? And who's more powerful?
My wife, of course.
Of course, yes.
Of course.
Okay, she sent you out to do this interview.
No, I think the reason that we have been successful is that we have very different skills.
Right.
I can go into an epileptic fit if there's going to be a logistically difficult issue or an accounting issue or a finance issue, and Marianne is really good about that. On the other hand, I'm really good with customer facing and generating ideas, and so I think the fact that we have different skills and recognize that the other one complements each other has been very good.
Well, Larry, I have to say, it probably has been somewhere around 30 years since I originally came across you and your original business. And you know what? At this time of year, I'd like to say, I hope we're still running across each other in 30 more years.
From your lips to God's ears.
Great. And it's great having you on the show. And I know you're going to be coming back frequently next year.
Look forward to it.
Great.
Thanks.
We're going to take a break, and we're going to be right back after these messages on Radio Entrepreneurs.